Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noom Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noom Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noom hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait, you look and sound just like me.
I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money?
A lot less. I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV, starting at just $40 a month.
Everything great about me, but for less money?
Which makes me greater, don't you think?
Get the news you love and more for less.
Start saving today. Visit Sling.com to see your offer.
Sling.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery mobile game that puts your detective skills to the test. Embark on a journey into a gripping narrative where intrigue, secrets, and unexpected twists await at every turn. Play as June Parker and investigate beautifully detailed scenes of the 1920s whilst uncovering the mystery of her sister's murder. Rediscover the magic of June's childhood as you roam the vast estate filled with secrets and memories waiting to be uncovered. Gather compelling evidence and decipher clues, immersing yourself in a captivating world of discovery that will keep you hooked until the very end. Compete with friends and other players to see who can solve cases the fastest or achieve the highest scores. Are you ready to jump back in time, detectives? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Discover the secrets of the past. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
The United States Border Patrol has exciting and rewarding career opportunities with the nation's largest law enforcement organization. Border Patrol agents enjoy great pay, outstanding federal benefits, and up to $20,000 in recruitment incentives for newly appointed agents. If you are looking for a way to serve something greater than yourself, consider the United States Border Patrol. Learn more online at cbp.gov/careers/USBP. That's cbp.gov/careers/USBP.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
All across the planet, the deep breath before the start. The Premier League returns this week. Be still, my beating heart. The fans upon the terraces and the world's biggest names strain upon the slips from St. Mary's to St. James. And so the chaos begins again. That roller coaster ride is crashing in comes that inevitable football tide. Prepare for goosebumps down your arms and shivers down your back. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, the Premier League is back. Let's start with the champions because City saw it through and then added a veritable goal machine to their glorious football crew. Erling Haaland, Terminator in the Citizen Sky Blue, a terror in waiting for defenders, if we're telling true. And Liverpool on the chase didn't need a revolution, but added Carvalho and Darwin for their latest evolution. Chelsea under new ownership, it's been a strange old time, but added Sterling and Koulibaly. Under Tuchel, they'll be fine. Conte's rang the changes over at Spurs on the lane, back in Europe, back in business with a locked-in Harry Kane, and Arteta's Arsenal might be the most exciting team around. Is this finally the time they haul themselves back up to higher ground? It's total football season with Ten Hag at United. Pre-season vibes got Old Trafford real excited. West Ham gets Gamaka and Villa strengthened too. A fascinating time if you're attached to Claret and Blue. Over on Tyneside, the anticipation's clear. Toon on the up is the feeling for this year. New faces in the dugout, not too many of them. Brighton, Leicester and Saints stick with their tried and tested men. Jesse has Leeds pressing a Red Bull on the White Rose, whilst Vieira as Palace dreaming that their youngsters are on the right roads. Brentford turned atheist, a Christian departed, but no one's doubting Thomas, frankly, the way that they started. Talking of Frank, Everton have had a weird pre-season. Talking about survival, negative or a voice of reason. And Wolves need resurgence, although solid under Large. Dreaming of Europe once again, can they reignite their charge? Finally, the new boys in two will feel well-versed. Bournemouth and Fulham try once more to escape that yo-yo curse. Well, after 23 years away, Nottingham Forest, welcome back. The spending spree's been a big one. Can they make it click in attack? So strain upon the whistle, every great story has a start. And let the ups and downs begin to palpitate your heart. Once more into the madness, once more into the throng. Once more into the terraced world of cheer and groan and song. Once more into the pleasure, once more into the pain. The Premier League is back, ladies and gentlemen, once again.
Woo! Hey, here he is. He's back.
What else
He's
is back? Bones are back. Welcome to Ranks FC, ladies and gentlemen. Hello to the entire Rank squad. We are into the second of our five preview episodes that are going to formulate across your podcast feed over the next 2 weeks. And it's a big one. My name is Jack Collins and I will be your host today. And joining me is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, mate. How are we?
Good. That was nice. It felt good to be back in the mode.
Good, yeah. It's old school, isn't it? It's a bit old school.
Yeah, we'll have some more. We'll have some at the end of the transfer window as well. So we're going to try and keep them occasional this year. But we've had a few months away, so it felt like the right time to return into poetic verse to get things started. Talking of getting things started, we are not going to do things we love today, because this is going to be a big episode. We're just going to go straight into this, Sam, and I'll hand over to you to kind of explain what we're going to get going on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's time to preview the Premier League. It's time to talk about the big kickoff, finally. Although, to be fair, even though I say finally, it did feel like preseason kind of flew by at points, but here you go. Anyway, in line with what we've already kind of established this week in our kind of preview fortnight, we're going to be, or I have split the table into five different tiers. So rather than do like a 1 to 20, which is really quite difficult, and I think to an extent a bit of a fool's errand when there's so much of the transfer window to go, we're going to group the teams into tiers and we're going to go from bottom upwards. So reverse order to what our friend John McKenzie did on Monday for the Bundesliga preview, where he went from the champions down. We're going to start from the bottom. And I'm ready if you are, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, look, we will obviously have a 5x5 episode at the end of the transfer window that will roll us into the season once everything is kind of done and dusted and that door has been shut and we've had a little chance to experiment with the teams that we're interested in and see how we feel about them after a couple of weeks play. So there will be a 5x5 where we'll all be ranking our top fives of the top five leagues in Europe. So there is going to be that element of picking and predicting. But for now, I think it's good to just get things into an order and see where we think teams currently stand.
Yeah, I think we can group them together quite nicely. And I think we can start with tier five. You know, the three promoted clubs naturally feature in this tier. Bournemouth would probably be my pick right now for last spot if I had to pick one. Not a massive fan of Scott Parker, and I'm sure I'll get some nodding heads from my co-hosts. And I think he has a pretty weak squad, probably the weakest squad in terms of talent. And I think it will end up looking like the weakest squad at the end of the transfer window. Fulham are right here with them, unfortunately, and I can hand that straight over to you guys. But if you don't sign the defence, you guys are going down. So I really hope that you do sign the defence, because I don't really want you to go down. I like it when you guys have fun. But really, ultimately,
which is normally called being in the Championship, yeah. I think, these days.
Yeah, but Marco Silva, you know, he keeps saying, you know, don't say I'm angry, but he should be really angry.
He cuts a frustrated figure, is how I'd put it.
Yeah, I heard Archie on Fulhamish, Jack, you know, but he summed it up really well. You guys know that you knew that you were coming up in February, March?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it was blatantly March was locked, yeah.
Blatantly obvious by the new year and locked pretty much in March. And you've done so little. And I know that it's not necessarily fair to say, well, look, Forest have signed 12. Why can't we sign 12? It's not really necessarily how it works, but Forest came up through the playoffs. They had less time to prepare. Would have been working off two different shortlists, have to start making those calls much, much later. So I don't see where Fulham's excuse is, and I don't understand why it has taken this long.
Well, the excuse is that the players that we're trying to sign for the defence are Premier League players, and that is what's taking so long and why Fulham have not managed a breakthrough. Because when you try to sign players from Premier League clubs, it's harder, it's more expensive. Basically, that's it. It's more expensive is the ultimate thing. And they'll try to drive the price up. And Fulham don't want to play over the odds. And unfortunately, you kind of have to. And so far, they've resisted doing it. Eventually, going to have to cave in. Whether that's spending 20 million on Issa Diop, then so be it. They've obviously looked at like Eric Bailly. They've looked at Malang Sarr. They've looked at various players. Vestergaard at Leicester, who's actually quite cheap, I think. I think he's available around about 12 million.
There's a reason for that.
Maybe, but he wasn't a mug at Southampton, was he? Like,
no, he just was only ever really seen good. Him perform well in a three-man defence. Because
a really
he's
good, like,
got a turning circle of the Titanic.
Yeah, a really good
once
4 months.
It sunk.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, like, ultimately that's been the problem. And, you know, if we get Bernd Leno over the line, which seems to be taking forever, but keeps seemingly stepping a little bit closer. So if you get Leno in goal, that's helpful. And then you have to sign two centre-backs. As it stands, yeah, we deserve to be in any bottom three that is predicted, because
Tim Ream's going to be starting the season. And Tim Ream, bit of a Fulham cult hero for what he's managed to achieve in his time there. Like no problem with him like being around the squad and stuff. But really, really hoped he wouldn't be in our starting lineup against Liverpool on Saturday. That does scare me. Even if Nunes starts, he might score. So
here we go. KCD.
Here we go again.
Sorry, just a little snipe, But yeah, so that's where we're at, really.
Well, look,
right?
I mean, I take the point, but ultimately, if you're trying to be a bit stingier, don't want to pay over the odds, and then come up with nothing, and then end up paying over the odds a month later, all you did was waste a month. All you did was miss pre-season. Don't get these players in time to gel, in time to coordinate, and that is a waste of time. So it's a tough situation to be in. That Forest have signed 12 players. And getting them to gel is going to be really tough. This goes one of two ways. I think they have to be in this bottom tier of six teams. And then moving away from the newly promoted guys, there are three existing Premier League teams who I think need to be considered in this area as well. Everton are still in this. They've lost Richarlison, which is a big problem. They've signed Burnley's best players, which isn't a bad start to recovering, but I still feel they're probably a little bit short, and I guess you could maybe even argue they're still weaker than they were last year, given Richarlison was so good for them.
Yeah, I tell you, they're definitely weaker than they were last year. I think until you find someone, I like Dwight McNeil a lot, but until you find someone to, you know, kind of chip in with the creativity and work rate that he had, and I like McNeil as a fit at Everton, but I don't think that immediately replaces Richarlison. I don't think those two players are comparable quality.
I mean, as it stands, it looks like maybe the plan is that Dele Alli replaces Richarlison, and the Dele Alli revival project is basically the key to success, which is a very dicey situation to be in. We know that Dele is a support striker, you know, off Calvert-Lewin. The Dele of old, you know, that's a perfect role for him. It really is. And he could work really well off Calvert-Lewin. But like, you know, I need to see it to believe it. So Everton's still in this bucket, along with Leeds, who I think are going to ship goals, which is never a good starting point. You know, if you think a team is going to leak goals, then you can't possibly be that confident in them doing much. And unless Southampton sign a marquee forward, like a really good one, I don't think I can put them in the tier above. So there's your six: Bournemouth, Fulham, Forest, the promoted teams, Everton, Leeds, Southampton. I mean, if you look at last year's table, it makes a fair amount of sense, I guess. The two teams, Everton and Leeds, that were right in it up until the final stretch. Southampton, who were hovering just above, and the three promoted sides. But I don't think this tier, this like legitimately should be worried about relegation tier, has ever been as big as six. I think it's usually about four.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I was going to say, on Leeds, like, I don't know. I agree they might concede a few goals, but I think they're going to be so much better than they were at the end of last season. In pre-season, there's been some really good signs. The thing that I think gives Leeds a really good chance is that they've got a good chance of a strong start to the season. And, you know, they've got Wolves, Southampton, Brighton, Everton, Brentford and Nottingham Forest. The only tough game they've got in between all that, they've got Chelsea the third game, but like all the others are like teams that are going to be in and around them. I think it's a perfect way for Jesse Marsh to get this side's confidence up from last season. I mean, Brendan Aaronson looks great so far and what he's bringing to the side. I know that Marsh just seems so much happier with what he has. Obviously, they've lost Rafinha, but they're doing their best to find ways to replace him. I actually think Leeds might have a good season. And by good, I mean like not being in the relegation scrap and being towards mid-table.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because that start can go one of two ways. Like, obviously, you want... But if it doesn't go well to begin with, right? You know, let's just say that... And look, this has happened to Fulham, so I've watched it in action. You know, there have been games where you're like, these are the games we needed to pick up points in and we haven't, like quite early doors. Mm. And if you're then looking at that and then, you know, after it comes out, you can imagine that the other side of that, you know, just before the World Cup, probably, is, you know, four or five tricky games in a row against, you know, teams that we think are going to be good this season. That's could be very, very difficult if you haven't got off to the start you want. It's a kind of like half and half. If you start with really tricky games, right? If you have like, you know, four of the top six in the first 6 weeks, you're kind of like, these are almost free hits to let ourselves get into the, you know, the rhythm and allow us to kind of transfer window to work through things before we have games that are on paper more winnable. But equally, you can find yourself adrift very quickly, and that's a worry too.
It's all fair logic, Dean, but I don't believe a word of it. I think really you're just carrying on your trend of being at the polar opposite of me on anything Leeds. The whole time Bielsa was there, you predicted doom. And now I've flipped, you're going positive. I can see right through your ploy.
But there was doom under Bielsa and it ended and then it continued. And they were top
half. They were top half and then they avoided relegation. I don't know what you're on about.
I'm seeing good things for Leeds in these early weeks of the season. I really am. I think they're going to get off to a good start.
Okay.
If Sinisterra hadn't done his hamstring in pre-season, I'd feel a bit happier, but I'm not there, unfortunately. But that is the bottom tier. So I can move us on to tier four, if you like.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, I think we start here with Brentford, who, in the words of Jack Collins, over and over again, have done really smart business this summer. Yeah, pretends to be shocked. They have a really solid base to build on, and they're buying good players. I think they're adding smartly. They're not overpaying for players, and they're just kind of picking up the right sort of profile, the right sort of players at the right sort of stage of their careers. And I think they're going to be safe this season. I'm going to lump Wolves in with Brentford, who have been really inactive in the market. And Raul Jimenez is now injured for the start of the season, and you do wonder about what a bad start in terms of results could do for Wolves. But they do have a Premier League quality side, so I'm never going to be putting them in that tier five. Surprisingly, I've also put Leicester in here, who I think until like 3 weeks ago I would have had as a top half option. But I'm just absolutely well and truly perplexed as to what on earth is going on with Leicester. I don't think you can prepare for a season any worse. They've made no signings, as we keep saying. Kasper Schmeichel is moving to Nice, you know, the captain of the club. Brendan Rodgers is talking about, you know, the opportunity for Danny Ward to step into that breach. There was a link today to Alex McCarthy. Can I just say to Leicester City as an entity, I don't understand why you're so obsessed with buying all of the players you beat 9-0. Because between Vestergaard, Ryan Bertrand, and potentially Alex McCarthy and Southampton's head of recruitment, I don't understand why you keep picking off these individuals. You beat them 9-0 once. They're not good enough to play for you. And on top of that, Leicester are dealing with what? Constant rumours about Tielemans, potential stuff about Jamie Vardy, potential stuff about James Maddison and Tottenham. This is not
and
the
Newcastle.
Way to... And Newcastle. And Newcastle,
and Kasper,
yeah.
And
Schmeichel
the loss
gone.
Of, this would mean, when Schmeichel gone, it means that Jamie Vardy is the last player left in his squad from that famous season, which is kind of mad.
It is, but it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, I suppose. But full squad turnover in 6 years is a lot.
It's true. I just don't get it. And I feel like Leicester should be in that top half conversation. But right now, I look at the way it's gone and I just can't see it. And then we come to the sort of rosier stories to finish out this area, which are Palace and Brighton, who I have also held out of the top 10. I know there are lots of people out there that would have at least one of these guys in that area. But it's top half feels like a stretch for Palace post Conor Gallagher. I like the Cheick Doucouré signing. But I don't think he's enough to genuinely replace Conor Gallagher. I don't think he'll replace the goals. And while I do love the trajectory Palace are on, just staying still would be an achievement for them, given they're in full rebuild mode still. And Brighton, solid enough. Kukurea is going to leave and that's going to hurt. Let's see what happens there. Question marks up front. Is Denis Undav going to get the nod? Is it Neil Maupay? Like, who knows? Again, Brighton feel pretty solid there, but I've seen people talking about eighth, possibly seventh for either of these two, and I'm not quite there with them. I think they're too solid and steady for that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you look at Palace and Brighton and Palace in particular, who I really like and have really enjoyed watching play football. And it's quite hard sometimes, I think, I'd maybe say this for both teams. You know, it's quite hard to see teams you're like, you're doing things well, you're doing things in a good manner, I like your business, et cetera, et cetera. Let's not go over the top with it. Mm. And that's a kind of funny place to be for these two, because they both feel like they are in a period, and maybe Brighton have felt like this for a long time, but, you know, bear in mind where these two clubs have been and in the last sort of decade. And you're looking at, you know, two teams who have been either, you know, in the Championship for spells or been in the bottom half of the Premier League for long spells. And you're kind of at that point being like, where, you know, what the progress is going to be slow. And, you know, as much of that as anything is about the teams who are, you know, slightly bigger and have more capacity for spending money on signings and have all of those things to their advantage. And these are two clubs who are focused quite heavily on youth, who've brought in some clever signing. There's analytics going on at Brighton. We've seen this kind of revolution under Vieira at Palace, and all of it's good and all of it I like. But I don't know if that's enough to force you into the top 10 of the Premier League this year, because there is so many teams in that conversation on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's year-on-year progress does not necessarily translate into points tallies and therefore positions. It just doesn't work like that. Like Palace and Bayern feel like they're both taking steps forward, but that probably comes in despite the fact that they probably stand still. And it's just one of those things. And we even talked about this last year. Do you remember when Man United finished second the year before? And I was like, well, you know, they've made some, you know, they signed Ronaldo and Varane. And you said, right, where are they going to finish? And yeah. Sancho, and where are they going to finish? Fourth. But that's two down from where they were last year. Yeah, I know. This is how the Premier League is. It's tough.
You can get better and finish worse. And yep. and a lot of teams do. And that could be well where these two end up at this point. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I kind of wanted to touch on this kind of middle ground here and Wolves in particular. Obviously, you know, we've talked about Leicester there a little bit. The fact that they are the only team yet to sign anyone is one thing. And you look at Wolves, and we've seen a change in shape in pre-season and kind of how this looks to them. It's going to be a very interesting thing. And I do wonder if Bruno Lage doesn't get off to a good start here, if he's going to be the first person in trouble a little bit, because you look at this side and, you know, they tried that switch to four at the beginning of last season. It didn't hugely work. They went back to five. Everything kind of happened a bit in a way that Melty felt a bit better, and Wolves conceded very few goals. But when it came to the sharp end of the season, and, you know, wind back to March, we were talking about Wolves, you know, being the team that's hardest to beat. No, I will make my own claim in a minute, but we were talking about Wolves being one of the hardest teams to beat in the Premier League. Now I took that way too far. I was like, look, they're the most consistent, they're going to get in the top four. It was nonsense, I agree. You look at it and you think, okay, they were in a place there that when they had the opportunity to kick on, and look, even if, you know, top four is obviously a mad shout, but you look at where they should have finished from where they were in sort of March in a European spot. I think, like, I genuinely believe that they had the capacity to do that. They didn't have other constraints on the side. They weren't faced with a variety of fronts they were playing on, whereas a lot of their competitors here were. And then you're going, okay, well, how did that fall away at that part of the season if there wasn't all these other factors to bring in? And the reason was that they couldn't score goals. And that was a really strange thing. And you look at this summer and you think, okay, if Raul Jimenez is going to be out for long periods, and I know that Fabio Silva didn't have a great year last year, but he was brought in to be this backup. He's gone away now on loan to Anderlecht. And you're going, well, who steps into this void if Raul Jimenez is injured for long periods again? And I don't know. Wolves have a lot of question marks for me. I've seen people put them into this relegation struggle. I think that might be a bit too far. But I do think that if it doesn't start well, we could see serious upheaval at Molineux.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with everything on that. I'm very, very wary of what their start is going to be like. I mean, I guess it backs up the reason why I fancy Leeds to have a good start, because they're playing against them. I think that's a nice place for a side to give themselves a confidence boost if you can. I mean, a win over Wolves would set them back and push you forward, and you're kind of looking to compete for similar spots in the end. So yeah, Wolves will probably prove us wrong a little bit, because they've got players in there still that I thought would have moved on by now. You know, Neves, possibly Moutinho, who ended up staying. But yeah, the lack of Jimenez for the start of the season could be significant.
Well, we're looking at maybe Hwang Hee-chan, Daniel Pedence, and Pedro Neto. I mean, like, actually, I love all three players. Yeah. They're all really good. It's just that it's about the court, like who can step into the void. And yeah, it's been a bit concerning. But I mean, look, as we know, Jack, Nathan Collins can just do it all by himself, beat six players to score. So maybe that's the plan. Nathan Collins up front.
Get Nathan Collins into the areas where he's really dangerous, and you'd be unstoppable this season. Absolutely, right? Well, I suppose that kind of takes us to vaguely the halfway stage. I know you've done 11. There's nine teams left, but it feels like that's the natural break, Sam, in the tier system. So after the break, we're going to be talking about the movers and shakers higher up in the Premier League table. Don't go anywhere.
the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time to talk about those teams who are dreaming of Europe next season. Sam, back to you.
Yeah, tier three time, and there's three clubs in this little cluster. West Ham, who pretty much a guaranteed top half team. They've done an amazing job of building something pretty sustainable here. It's very hard to isolate exactly where they are going to end up, whether they can challenge for sixth, whether seventh is their limit, or maybe whether they slip below seventh and don't qualify for Europe next year. And it all depends on one thing, doesn't it? How far they go in the Europa Conference League, which is a competition that they can win. It's a competition that they should absolutely put full energy into and see if they can do it. They got really close to the Europa League last season. The Conference League is ever so slightly easier. I mean, you're not avoiding all the big guns. The final last year was, of course, Feyenoord against Roma. It's pretty much European royalty. But that's something that West Ham could and should really focus on post-Christmas. And that obviously has an effect on their ability to churn through Premier League games. So West Ham feel like the perfect example as to why I break it down into tiers rather than do a 1 to 20, because it completely and utterly depends on whether or not they're flying to Slovenia in February or whether they're not, whether they're out of it. So let's see on West Ham, but a top half finish for sure, and we'll see depending on the Conference League. I'm going to put Newcastle in this little cluster as well. They do need to regenerate the momentum they established at the end of last season, but hey, they look like a really strong team. They've made some excellent signings in 2022. And when was the last time we talked about Newcastle in the Premier League context and weren't even remotely concerned about relegation? It must have been a long time ago.
98, 99. Remember that season of podcasts we did?
Yeah, yeah. Let's call back to the glory days. Me as a toddler hosting a podcast about Newcastle not succeeding. But yeah, no, that's it, isn't it? It's a... Obviously, the goalposts have changed in some ways because the entire thing is separate to what we were looking at some time ago. But yeah, well, you know, I'd be interested to find out what, you know, Newcastle's expectation is. Are they going to be pushing for a European spot? Is that what the fans expect this season? Or is it just we are slowly moving ourselves into the conversation and kind of getting to those places? Because I suppose that kind of determines whether that's a success or not.
Yes, I guess so. I mean, they're probably hoping for a marquee signing in attack to really rubber stamp the European charge, I'd imagine, Dino. Like, they're probably targeting something like that. And maybe without that, the fans aren't quite getting so carried away yet. But I guess there's scope for that to change across August, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly that. Like, we've obviously seen them go for Maddison. If you're looking for a creator, someone that can do something special, like if they don't get Maddison, like, I don't know, they've liked Ross Barkley, so they might even just go for someone like him if that all falls through. Like, I think they'll get a creator behind there of some sort, but they obviously want a forward who is proven. We've talked loads of times about how they would like Calvert-Lewin. They haven't gone for it because ultimately, I think Everton will price him out of it. I was told that basically Newcastle have a budget of about 70 million for two players. You see at the moment they're bidding like 40-ish million for Maddison, which wouldn't give you the budget to then go and land Calvert-Lewin. So
it's
not enough for Maddison at the moment either. Yeah, exactly that. I'm not sure Maddison actually wants to go there. So we'll have to wait and see. But they definitely are trying to jump a couple of tiers in this table because, and rightly so, based on the fact that they...
And they have done, according to Sam, to be fair, because they were in the...
Yeah, exactly. They literally have. Last year, they were in the very bottom tier.
Yeah, and they deserved to be at the start of last season. And then in the second half of the season, it all turned around for them as the signings started arriving. And they are now stronger than they were at the end of last season in terms of, you know, Sven Botman obviously particularly is an unbelievable get in this market. I think they could challenge that top seven. I don't know if they'll make it, but they could challenge the top set, like making it in there.
Yeah, I mean, what's spurring the optimism, surely, is that not only have they made great signings and picked up some really good players this year, you know, Bruno Guimarães and those guys, the reinvention of Joel Linton, Nick Pope, you know, pretty cheap considering, and obviously Sven Botman coming in, but like all the players Eddie Howe inherited are all playing better as well. You know, it meant that you've got things like, you know, you've got that Emil Kraft signed a new 2-year deal. I was speaking to one of our patrons, Billy, about this a couple of days ago. It's like Emil Kraft, not really the play you want, you know, if you're stepping up the levels, but you know, he's actually been pretty solid since Eddie Howe came in. You can say that about pretty much all of the players, and they're now building a squad with some depth to it. And ultimately, they probably are that forward away, or that just that attacking X factor piece from really genuinely cracking into the next tier. But they're here. They're a top half contender, I think. And they sit with West Ham, and they sit with Aston Villa, I think, as well, who complete this little tier of three, who have gone out and signed players that I genuinely believed would be beyond their reach. You know, Boubacar Kamara, who Man United should have signed for their midfield. Diego Carlos has spent the last 3 years starting for a Champions League club. He's won a Europa League. What is he doing at Aston Villa? I don't really understand what's going on there. But Gerrard's in charge. They've got a really talented team. Coutinho, Jacob Ramsey. I mean, Emi Martinez. There's some really good players here. I think maybe what sold me on putting them in this tier, though, is making this very big call on Tyrone Mings. All signs point to Tyrone Mings being dropped, who has been essentially the biggest weakness at Villa for the last year and a half. He makes a lot of errors and it costs them, and it's a problem. And the easiest way to upgrade this team would be to remove those errors. Now, whether or not the answer is Diego Carlos, I don't know, who is a bit like Prime Pepe in his somewhat erratic behaviour and hot-headedness at times. But Mings has had the captaincy removed from him, which is probably foreshadowing the idea that he's no longer going to be in this team. And a defensive line of Luca Dean, Diego Carlos, Callum Chambers or Ezri Konsa, and Matt Cash, it's pretty damn good. It's pretty damn good. And I think they're a top half outlet here, especially with Coutinho pulling the strings.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because, you know, Tyrone Mings, you know, we're all kind of in agreement, I think, that Tyrone Mings has been a wee bit of a liability for Villa of late. Obviously, he was excellent lower down. He was an excellent championship. He did very well in that first season back in the Premier League. But of late has kind of struggled, I think, with it kind of full stop. But when you kind of come to it, he has done a lot of brilliant things off the field, Tyrone Mings as well. And captain of a club is about more than what it is just on pitch. Mm. So it was a decision that, you know, I'm not suggesting I disagree with it completely, but it was a decision that I was a bit like, ooh, was that completely necessary? And it seems like a funny thing to do. And I agree with you in that, obviously, you want your captain playing every week, and you do want someone who the rest of the players feel they can look to. But I don't know, I felt a little bit sorry for him. I didn't think it was nice.
It's because he's such an amazing human being. It's just 100 times harder to do this to him. But I do think that your captain needs to be a key player for you. I think that's, unless they're like, you know, Totti at 36, which is a completely different argument. I think your captain has to be a key man. And so, yeah, he's taken the armband off Mings because I think he wants to take him out of the first choice 11. And I think that's justified. And by the way, checking in on Villa in pre-season, Mings was the worst centre-back of the four. So he didn't do himself any favours in terms of fighting for that armband when it was on the line. He was the worst of the four. And I think he might be the worst of the four on paper. So
yeah,
that's kind of where they are with it. You know, it's a brutal reality. But, you know, Newcastle, Villa, they're both trying to take big steps forward very, very quickly. And these are the kinds of decisions, the really awkward, difficult decisions that teams that are trying to skip up the ladder have to make every now and then. And we'll see it with Newcastle in the coming years as well, if they continue on this trajectory. But West Ham, Newcastle, Villa, I'm holding just outside the top six, but I think they're all three are going to finish in the top half. And I think one of them is going to finish seventh and therefore get Europe. I just don't know which one it is.
No, it's a fair point.
It's fair enough before a ball's been kicked, to be fair.
Last year, my outlandish Premier League prediction before we began was that Villa would get Europe. So I'm glad. Just a year out, apparently. We'll see how we go. We'll see how we go. But I think there's going to be a lot of debate and a lot of intrigue as to how that one plays out, which takes us into Tier 2, Sam.
Tier 2, Yeah, 2-2. It's a four-team tier. We have Spurs, who genuinely, I'm going to lead with them here, but if I had to pick right now, I would put them in third place in my 1-20. They're a really strong team. They've added really good players. They have one of the best managers in the world. Things are looking good for Spurs right now. They really are. They might not do anything in the Champions League because Conte hates Europe, but they're looking really, really good. Arsenal, they're close neighbours. I mean, there's been some good competition between these two over the course of pre-season. Both have had really strong transfer windows. Both are shaping up for, I think, really good campaigns. Arsenal feel like the form team in the Premier League, despite there being literally no games played, if that even makes any sense at all. But they're coming into this season with amazing momentum, some really good signings in place. Chelsea needs to get it together. Simple as that. We hoped that Chelsea would be closing the gap between themselves and Man City and Liverpool. And it was a big gap last season. And if anything, it feels like they're even further away. It's just not happening for them at the moment. But it could, of course, it could improve over the course of August. But right now, fifth is more realistic than second, I think, for Chelsea because of the competition in this tier. And then you have the ultimate wild card, Manchester United. I've just written the words, who knows? Genuinely, who knows? Because who knows?
Good analysis.
Yeah.
Good analysis.
Who knows? It could be sixth. It could be fifth. It could be fourth. It could be third. I can see any of those possibilities depending on all sorts of things. Ronaldo, Frenkie, Martial, the players listening to Ten Hag, the consistency, the determination, the intensity, how they battle a European campaign in the Europa League, all these factors, I don't know. But this is my tier of four here. And it is a separate tier from the top two. I think I think that's the key point. I do not consider these four teams to be in the same tier as the others.
Yeah. So the Tottenham thing, like I've been thinking this too about, like, so they've got all the, they've got the six signings that they wanted to make. And then someone said to me the other day, yeah, but what difference are they going to make actually to Tottenham's season, considering they came fourth last year? And I've actually... I have reassessed how I feel about this a little bit right now. And I do still feel that they are lacking something because Longley, as a defensive signing, he wasn't their first choice, far from it.
No.
They've ended up with him. And I don't know how good he is anymore, to be honest. The fact Barcelona have let him go tells me...
Yeah, but they're just trying to...
He's not a Champions League player.
Wage bill, isn't it? I mean, Longley's
had... everything for Barcelona with a pinch of salt, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Longley has had a nice start to pre-season, but it's just pre-season, and it's been a long time since Clement Longley played like we know he
probably
can.
He won't start the season, probably, right? I spoke to someone, they said Ben Davis will probably start left-sided centre-back at the start of the season.
And if he's not quite fit enough for it, Davinson Sanchez has played loads of left centre-back in pre-season.
He has, yeah.
Doesn't really suit him, bless him, but he has played.
I think Perisic
it.
Might be the only new signing that actually starts at the weekend, which is quite interesting because Conte actually said about him the other day, this isn't the Perisic I recognise. There's a long way still to go, basically.
That's classic Conte. Like, oh,
that's cool.
That is classic Conte.
I do think he'll be good, but... I don't know. Like,
I do think the Perisic comment is geared towards fitness levels.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the signing for the door well early and he didn't play a part for a while. We didn't see him in the first few 11s. I wonder if it was more fitness related.
It might be, yeah.
But Conte once famously said Perisic can't play wing back. He doesn't have the fitness levels for it. And then Perisic proved that he did. So Conte does this, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's true. And okay, so the other things to consider are like Son, obviously, unbelievable season last year and the year before, to be honest. Is that his level he continues or did he overperform both years and can't possibly do that for another year? I don't know. Maybe he is genuinely like that superstar status and will do that again. I don't know. Harry Kane probably will score more goals than he did last season. So you get that out of him. I don't know they can improve on four is probably where I'm at. They seem to be trying to sign Zaniolo at the moment, which is...
I don't like this. I don't like it either because I don't know if there's space.
Yeah, I don't really get it. I don't know where he's playing.
I saw really, really concerning report that Conte is looking at him as a potential wing-back, which makes me feel physically ill.
Physically ill, yeah.
He's got loads. He's got loads of wing-backs.
It's not even that. Imagine the idea of playing broken Zaniolo in a position that demands that much physical activity. No, thank you. Please, no, thank you.
And then on the Man United thing, I'm actually So obviously I got MUTV for pre-season just because it was the, it's been really hard to watch pre-season generally, like, yes, hasn't it? Like, yep. It has been one of the hardest years I can remember to get a grasp on all the top teams.
These games used to be on Sky Sports. These about Barclays Asia Trophy in Singapore. Sky Sports would cover it.
Sky Sports, you'd have Premier Sports.
The clubs appear to have retained all of the rights to their own pre-season stuff and then put it all behind a paywall. So to watch it all, you've got to have like 25 subscriptions.
Exactly. And, Man United's games just happened to be quite well timed that I thought, oh, I could actually probably watch most of them. So for the £6, it's probably worth it. And I've watched, three games, I think, maybe four. What I've actually noticed, though, is just at times when I've had the TV on, is I've seen all these interviews that I would never have seen. And they're with people like Steve McLaren talking about Ten Hag. And actually, it's been really, really interesting to understand like the philosophy behind it all. And Steve McLaren is like, okay, he can, the Wally with the Broly, whatever. He's been a bit of a joke figure at times, but he's also been a top level coach for a long, long, long time. Was part of Man United's like most successful team, basically. And the way he talks about Ten Hag is really interesting. Like, he's like, this guy has the overall vision, and then he basically gives us all roles to carry it out. And if we don't carry it out well enough, we hear about it very quickly. He's not afraid to, you hear about him telling off the players, we get exactly the same thing. So I can't remember how he pronounced his name. Mitchell van der Gaag, is that it? Is that how you pronounce the name of the other assistant? G-A-A-G is, I'm not sure how you pronounce that in Dutch. God. But
in Dutch, I'll call that him Mitch. Might be a really, really big mouthful, that.
I'll call him Mitch, right?
Mitch Mertz.
Mitch basically plans the sessions that to carry out the overall vision of Ten Hag. And Steve McLaren has like been seemingly really, really won over by this vision. And he's talking about stepping into the dressing room and seeing like a team that, because I usually recognize when a team is heading in the right direction. And I'm not just saying this, I genuinely feel there's something about this side. And I think also by like bringing in things like Benny McCarthy, that seems so random that Benny McCarthy is suddenly a forward coach at Man United. What a great person for like Rashford, Martial, Sancho to be learning from, right? Like this guy was like one of the best and such a good
Benny
guy
McCarthy,
as well.
Yeah.
Like such a top guy, and he's going to bring fun to the place as well. So I think that like the sorts of profiles that Ten Hag's brought in behind the scenes has been as important to him as the players he's trying to bring into that team. Obviously, he hasn't got the De Jong that you want and the forward that you want to finish off this puzzle in time for the season to start by the looks of things as we record this. But I just think if he does get those two players, then United do make the top four. If they don't, then I'm not sure they'll be able to. But if they do, I think they'll make it. So that's where I'm at with
it. It's good. I like the moving it on to sort of the backroom stuff, which do play a hugely important part. And to sort of, level with you on the Man United Tottenham thing, for example, Tottenham have brought in, Italy's most famous set piece coach. And he's got a ridiculous book of like 1,000 different plays. And I'm expecting quite a big uptick in the set piece game from Tottenham. And it's these little, what seem like quite small differences that can actually end up creating a sort of like a 7-point margin on what you would have done.
Totally.
Seven points can take you from fifth to third in this kind of landscape. So it does make it very, very difficult if all the top clubs are getting smart and doing their jobs. And let's be honest, every single one of them, except for Chelsea right now, are being run pretty exceptionally. Either by the manager or by the coaching staff or in terms of recruitment. Chelsea have those question marks. I don't really know if it's going to get resolved. So I am holding them back from that top two, when really coming into the summer, you'd think that they were the most likely to jump into that top tier.
I still think that their starting 11 is stronger than Tottenham and Man United. So they've got the best chance of staying in there and, making some sort of challenge towards the top two. And by the time the season's underway, that they'll have added two or three. I mean, they're trying to sign Cucurella as we record this, and seemingly agreed personal terms. Not sure exactly where he fits into Chelsea.
That could be a left centre back, to be fair.
It could be, but is that not wasted?
It's not wasted, I guess.
I don't like it at all, Bradley.
I don't understand it. Like, there's a lot of other people you could buy left centre back.
It's just a lot of money to spend on a backup left back.
Yeah,
they must want to take it really slow with Chilwell.
Maybe it's a strange one, but then there are more pieces. I just think that like Chelsea, while preseason definitely hasn't gone that well, their starting 11 still really, really strong. Obviously, Koulibaly and Raheem Sterling are like top level additions.
Yeah, fair enough. I might be distracted by the preseason carnage, but that's why we do the 5x5s after the window closes, and we get a little idea for it. But look, I'll move us on to the top tier and finish this off. The top tier is, if you haven't figured out who these two teams are, welcome to the podcast. We cover Premier League football. That's England's top flight. Traditionally dominated by Manchester City and Liverpool in recent times. And again, they feel like the strongest teams. Loads of continuity in terms of the playing style and the manager and all that stuff. Few important personnel changes that we've obviously covered in depth over the course of the summer. City have gone ahead and added goal machine Erling Haaland. And, well, in response, they've actually lost a fair bit of depth. And you know what? Coming into the season, as soon as Liverpool traded away Sadio Mane and brought in Darwin, which, you know, short term does make them feel like a weaker side, I thought City have got the title nailed. But I am starting to look at the depth of City's squad and just asking a few questions. This season of all seasons, are they running it a little bit shy? And it does make for what feels like quite a level playing field once again between these two absolute titans, I think.
Doubts over Man City.
Not proper doubts, but just like, you know, one of those. Like,
That caught me out a bit. I really wasn't expecting you to question the depth of Man City's squad.
They haven't got that many players.
Everyone was like, ooh, okay. I think maybe you'd look at this kind of wing core as obviously the left back issue, which we've seen with this whole Cucurella standoff. It does look like they're moving for Sergio Gomez now at Anderlecht as a backup, which I don't mind, to be honest. I don't mind at all, because it feels like for so long, and this is something that I know Diggy Critchley, a friend of this pod, talks about quite a lot, is that, you know, big teams often miss out on players by just allowing people to bring them in. You know, your Brightons, your Leicesters, etc., bring them in and then sell them on for three times the price 3 years later. And it feels a bit with Sergio Gomez, I think, that they could avoid that and avoid paying 50 million for a backup left back, as you know, we just talked about with Chelsea, by maybe getting in someone younger who's quite happy to learn and become part of this squad. So you look there, and I think you look into this wing core, and that's where I think City probably are a little bit light on the ground. You know, we're talking Grealish, Mahrez, Bernardo can play out there, Foden can play out there, Cole Palmer, and Alvarez, who I think is going to play a little bit more than we expect from these wing positions. It's still quite a lot for two positions.
Six great players.
They are mostly great players. They are
literally great players.
It's just, you know, a squad like this, a team like this, is usually absolutely stacked. They've usually got one too many, if not rather than possibly one too few.
Maybe that was creating problems though.
Maybe. But, you know, I think they've got, you know, five centre mids when I'd expect a team like City to have six. I think they've got four and a half wingers when I'd expect them to have five or six. They've sold Zinchenko and haven't really fixed that yet. So that's obviously playing on my mind right now. And Laporte's having surgery and he's going to miss, you know, August and maybe September. And then you're, they kept Ake, but they're down to the three centre backs. I'm like, I don't understand how, how they don't have enough. Or they have like four positions where they just have question marks and concerns over. But then again, I feel like they've always got into the season with a potentially problematic position. They've usually made do by winning the title anyway. So we'll have to see. Maybe I'm just wobbling on the opening week of the season, and we'll have to see. Maybe by the time we do our 5x5s, I'll be more confident locking them in. But when Liverpool swapped Mane for Darwin, I put City far ahead in my mind as impending Premier League champions. And now I'm just pulling them back towards Liverpool a little bit and calling it a fight.
Well, I think it's going to be a fight, you know, whatever happens. Because, you know, last season we looked at this and City was streaming away by January and it was reined back in until it came down to the final minutes of the season, never mind the final match week. Yeah. So I think that, you know, what we've learned from this Liverpool side is that you're an idiot if you write them off. And I think that it's very important to not do that early doors, because, yes, you can say that, you know, that City are the favourites to win the title. And I think they are. Like, it would be a bit odd not to put them there with the signings they've made. Right? And I think they've got stronger. Whereas I think that Liverpool, as you say, short term, are potentially slightly weaker than they were last year, which is fine. You know, that's not a problem. It's a long-term thing that they're doing at Liverpool, and there's a lot of sensible planning for the future. But bringing in Darwin and Fabio Carvalho, I don't think quite makes up for the loss of Sadio Mane. That's fine. You know, that's not a major problem. It's just one of those things. You go, okay, fine, step back. I think it would take some sort of injury crisis for, you know, either of these teams to not be in the title race come, yeah, let's say February at the very least, right? Mm-hmm. That's an important thing, I think, to think about. But, you know, these are two of the best teams we've ever seen play football under two, you know, quite widely considered the two best managers in the game. It would be mad just to suggest at this point that there wasn't going to be a title race.
Yeah. I mean, look, also we're looking at City playing with the number nine now, and that will, I think, help somebody like Jack Grealish, who thrives off of playing with a traditional nine and with a focal point to aim for. I mean, you know, I've taken it back to England before, and I loved the way that Jack would have the outlet of Harry Kane to whip a ball in for, and it was the goal where he scored the diving header that Jack fired it across goal, and he'll look for that more and more. So I think we'll see Grealish step up. I think Foden will step up. I think you just see Foden's impact when he played in the Community Shield. I think Foden will have a standout season. And I think, like, yeah, it's Sterling, Jesus and Zinchenko leaving is interesting, but the fact is City were happy to let those guys leave. And not only were they happy to let them leave, they let all three join other Premier League clubs. Pep Guardiola would not be doing that if he, one, felt that he was going to miss those players, and two, felt he didn't already have the capability to replace them and yet also get stronger, probably because he's got Haaland, maybe also because of Alvarez and Calvin Phillips. But the opening match against West Ham, I think, is quite a tricky one potentially.
Yeah,
but after that, you got Bournemouth, Newcastle, Palace and Forest. And I think, you know, you probably come through that spell looking at an unbeaten team. If you don't, if Man City have suffered a defeat early on in any of those games, then suddenly you are starting to question, like, all this time, you know, Pep's been asked, yeah, but don't you miss a number nine? He'll be asked, but why are you playing with a number nine? You're really good with that one.
Oh my God, he will get
so wound up. And it will only be a matter of time. It will happen. Like, the second the Man City lose a game, they'll lose 1-0. And I was like, yeah, but this isn't really working with this number nine system you're playing, is it? Why don't you play Gundogan in there as a false nine and just bring Haaland on for the last 20 minutes if you still haven't scored?
Can you imagine there the look will be murders. Give that reporter?
There will be murders.
We'll find out.
I don't think we can make that gamble. It's too much of a stress for anyone involved.
It's a brave question.
But I think, Sam, you're absolutely right. These two, I think, are far and away. And look, last year we talked a little bit about the fact that, and you mentioned it earlier, that you thought Chelsea were closing that gap when they brought, you know, the players they brought in last summer, and Thomas Tuchel was in his first full season. Obviously, that gap wasn't closed. In fact, it was probably widened. And I think that, considering what we've seen, I think you're probably right in that these two are just streets ahead of everyone else at the moment. And it feels like if anyone's going to challenge the other for the title, it's just between the two of them once again.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but might be a two-team title race once again. That said, it's never really bad news, is it? Because they're just exhilarating to watch.
We might get a title, you know, at least we can have a title race. Like, there was years gone by when we didn't even have title races. So, like,
true.
The fact we, you know, we're guaranteed to have one of some sort, and it's just probably going to be a two-team one. Like, that's fine. If someone else throws their hat in there and manages to catch up for a bit, then that's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to see if Forest's new signings gel.
Yeah. Or if Fulham can bring in some centre-backs, and then we'd be grand, I think. That'll be that. Okay, well done, Sam. Very, very good. A quick-fire preview through the Premier League. I mean, it's still 50 minutes, but I feel like you could do hours and hours on this, and we still wouldn't touch the sides on everything you're trying to get through when you look for these full predictions. So there'll be more to come, obviously, with the way that the 5x5s work. And when we go back to talking about the best transfers of the summer, I imagine all of this will feed back into this conversation. But for now, I think we've set ourselves out a nice stall before the Premier League returns on Friday night. After the break, we have a Men of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for everybody's favourite part of the week. And Dee Jones, the floor is yours.
Machine gun at the ready, right? Toxic Dean's back.
Toxic Dean, yeah.
I get really upset, by the way. I do 50 minutes of hard work on a ranking or a, And you go, right then, thanks for that, Sam. Dean, time for everyone's favourite time of the week.
That part takes 2 minutes and you think of it in about 10 seconds.
It's so demoralising. It really is.
Look, I mean, there wouldn't
be a show if you didn't do your part.
Exactly. They wouldn't have their favourite part of the week. Mate, you build the foundations and Dean gets the cherry on the top of the cake. That's how it works.
Yeah, I also get a lot of stick in my DMs my choices. So especially a certain Nunes. But anyway, worked hand in hand with this one. It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Erling Haaland.
Hey!
I have to. If I'm going to be harsh, if I'm going to batter Nunes, and I have to make fun of Haaland when he deserves it too. Yeah, someone on Patreon did say to us the other day, enjoying the return of Toxic Dean. So if that's what the people want, I have to say what I see. And what I saw was a horror miss from the best young striker in world football in the Community Shield. And it was Haaland. And look, obviously, like, it happens. But like, so if anyone that missed it in the Community Shield, Phil Foden hit a low, really good shot, actually. And
Adrian, was done, to be fair.
It was done, yeah. But it was 3-1 at the time. But doesn't really matter. Phil Foden hits the shot. Adrian makes the save low. And instinctively, of course, Erling Haaland pounces just as the ball comes back onto the six-yard box. Whole goal gaping. Adrian's on the floor, like, obviously making a token effort. You're expecting him to score. Like, it's almost a no-brainer. And from 6 yards, Haaland tries to lift it into the roof of the net and he spoons it a bit too much and it hits the top of the bar. It goes over and there's this crowd reaction that's kind of disbelief, shock and oh no, what's this from this guy who's supposed to score every single chance.
The roar from the Liverpool end was as much as I reckon the third goal.
And that's it, isn't it? It's these little things, these little mind games that do play a part in how the season is played out. And obviously when Nunes got Melon of the Week, it was based on the fact he was spooning everything for the first 2 weeks of pre-season and he was being made into a meme machine. Well, now we turn it around in the Community Shield. Well, Nunes was a bit of a melon himself for his over-celebrating, but ultimately...
No, I'm not having that. Well, he was having a good vibe, and I enjoy people liking football, so I feel like that's all right.
He'd listened to a podcast recently that had been likening him to a...
My dream is that someone does a post-match interview and says, this is back to... I was given Melon of the Week last week, and I just wanted to, like, respond to that. That's my dream. But... yeah, Nunes obviously came out of that game very well and Haaland didn't. Like, the tide had turned. But now we get to the real business. And I'm not sure if Haaland will miss chances again like this, but he might do. It was a proper head-in-hands moment. Like,
you kind of just want to get off the mark as well, don't you?
Like, he kind of had this smile on his face and he's like, but it's like, oh.
It legitimately will not bother him.
And no, of course it won't bother him. Is Erling, like, this is the thing. It shouldn't bother him. Like, he can't get to the stage of his career
He's got his Percy Pigs. He's happy enough. He's got his Percy Pigs.
But if it happens a couple of more times, people said this about Fernando Torres when he joined Chelsea for £50 million. It was a guaranteed success story. When he joined, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe they've managed to get Torres out of Liverpool. This sort of money, what an unbelievable signing. It didn't work out. It doesn't always work out now. I'm going down a dangerous path here. I still think Erling Haaland's going to be absolutely fine at Man City, but because of the new rules of Melon of the Week, the fact I'm going to be harsh on anyone that's missing chances or doing stupid tackles, I had a couple of people say, you've got to give Fred Melon of the Week because of his red card in pre-season. I was like, you're right. I do actually have to consider things like that right now.
Calvin Bassey is a contender, I would say, this week. Came on in the Dutch, well, equivalent of the Community Shield, the Johan Cruyff Shield. And it was 2-2 when he came on. By the time he was sent off 14 minutes after coming on, they were 4-2 down. that's about as bad as a debut can get, I think. I would have had him in the conversation, I'll be honest.
I basically want to level things out between Liverpool and Man City before the season gets underway. So now I've given both those guys, like, put them on the same platform. We'll just see how things go from here. I don't plan to give it to them again, let's see.
If you think this is going to save you from a Darwin hat-trick on the opening weekend of the season at the Cottage, you are very much mistaken, my friend.
Ah, oh, mate, he won't. He couldn't hit a barn door.
Right, on that. very short gibberish siren. And you're sticking with you, DJ. Considering Sam did the main two sections.
Yeah, Sam's had a busy day. So I didn't really know what to do. So I'm just going to do actors who represent food that I really like.
What?
At number it's for gibberish, right?
Yeah, I know.
When I checked you this morning and said, mate, can you cover a gibberish? I've got a few things on. This is the last thing I thought you'd come up with.
I thought we were going with like worst Premier League away kits of the season or something. But no, I'm intrigued. Let's hear it. Yeah.
Number three, Halle Berry. I love berries. Love berries. Strawberry, blueberry, raspberry, blackberry. That's my ranking.
And Halle Berry.
That's my ranking of actual berries. Yeah, but the other top berry is Halle Berry. Every time I see her, I just get that. My sweet tooth just starts to tingle a little bit. I need some fruit now. I'm going to get some strawberries.
This is some serious name association, mate.
Number two is Brie Larson.
Oh, fair play.
Turkey, cranberry and brie is my favourite combination.
In a sandwich or just full stop ever?
Sorry?
Is it in a sandwich or just like kind of full stop? I think my favourite combination
in a sandwich,
ever
to be
is...
fair, I'd love to cook an entire turkey, get a load of cranberry though and a load of brie and smother it all together and just eat that for the entirety of winter. I think I'd be very content. Absolutely delicious combination.
Yeah.
As for Brie Larson, she's great. Room is one of my favourite movies, so that's cool.
Yeah, and of course, Avengers Endgame.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we're going back to Dean's Marvel hatred, are we?
Well, I tried to get into it, remember? I got into two. I think I watched two.
off we go.
Number one, Kevin Bacon.
Of course.
Look, as an actor, his EE adverts absolutely drive me mad. I think they're one of the worst things I've ever seen. But bacon is an absolute belter, so I love it. I have to admit, I don't eat that much bacon these days because I'm getting towards that stage of life where you have to be a bit careful about your red meat intake and things like this. And I don't particularly want cancer, and they seem to be some reasonably strong links between the two if you eat bacon every day.
Bacon's not red meat.
I'm just also going to maybe just say that that is not officially fact checked. So please don't take that.
None of this is fact checked. The fact, it's not actually red meat.
Bacon is red meat.
Red meat. Well, no, but bacon is bad for you. There's no doubt about that.
Of course, it's fatty.
Yeah. So any of those kind of meats. The only meats I can really eat guilt free is like chicken or turkey.
Or
fish. But turkey is officially the worst meat.
Is it?
It's so rubbish. It's so dry.
I thought you meant like it was worse for you. Turkey a lot.
Oh, no, honestly. You know what? It's one of those weird ones because I was going to say this about the last thing, but we've come around to it anyway, so that's good. It's one of those where at Christmas, every time turkey comes, I'm like, really? We're doing this again?
We just decided
this is nonsense. But I don't like brie, right? Because I don't really like cheese, which is my biggest downfall, I think, maybe on planet Earth. but it's one of those where I'm like, that sounds like at least you're getting like enough moisture into the turkey to kind of stop it being the driest thing of all time. So it's not like sandpaper when you're having your Christmas dinner. But I would say maybe the most overrated food of all time.
What about turkey bacon? Have you had that?
Yeah, but again, not as good as actual bacon. So
not as good as bacon, but it's a bit healthier.
Yeah, I mean,
bacon's great on a hangover, isn't it? Bacon sandwich bacon, when you're hungover.
Sandwich.
Also, bacon
and egg sandwich. Is
bacon
is
in America, I like. You know, it's that Canadian bacon, isn't it? It's a bit different.
But the streaky stuff.
Streaky stuff. Yeah, I mean, imagine that's much, much worse for
you. It's definitely worse for you. I think it's like almost 70% fat.
It's just fat that is just burnt.
Yeah,
and it's just like crispy, but I can't resist it when you go on holiday.
You've added carcinogens to fat. Sounds like so I'd argue that maybe that's the one that we should.
Maybe
be
that's the one that gives
here.
You cancer. Yes,
that would maybe make more sense.
Maybe
it?
That's what I've got in my head about that. Yeah, the links.
This is why Ranks FC is not a health and well-being podcast.
No, take absolutely none of this as fact, apart from the fact that Kevin Bacon, Brie Larson, and Halle Berry are my favourite actors, actresses who represent foods I really like.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Very well argued.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
Oh, no, that was completely out of left
that
field.
That is gibberish. That is absolutely
really come
gibberish.
From the blue. A bolt from the blue from Dean Jones in the gibberish rankings is what we love here at Ranks FC. thank you very much. And I think on that official bombshell, it's probably time to call this episode a day. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Sam Tye for a wonderful main ranking.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to Dean Jones for the chaos of that last bit.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Just remember, you can listen back to our Bundesliga preview that came out on Monday. It'll be just below this in your feed. On Friday, we're going to have a preview of French Liga and the Portuguese Primeira coming out. And then next week, we're going to be doing La Liga and Serie A as well. All sorts of fun on the Ranks FC feed as we lead up to the new seasons across Europe's big leagues. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we will see you on Friday. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Gotta walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer practice, then there goes the extra time for a jog. That's okay. Maybe next week.
When everyone else relies on you, it's easy to put your needs last. Therapy is a dedicated time to focus on what you need to be happy, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. BetterHelp offers convenient online therapy on your schedule. It's the same professional service you'd get from an in-person therapist, but with the option to communicate when and how you want, by chat, phone, or video call. Go to their site and fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.